Now, in studio, your lending expert, family man, and servant leader, who's committed to honoring and empowering San Diego's servant leaders to rise up. Your host of Rise Up Radio, James Carmody.
Thank you for tuning in, folks. I'm your host, James Carmody. You're listening to Rise Up Radio. Thank you for being with us on this fantastic Saturday. We have an excellent show for you. We have a military show for you. We have five different leaders from the United States Coast Guard, and we cannot wait to share their story. Let's actually just dive right in. You know, I have a captain and a commander, Captain Joseph Bazella. Welcome to the show, sir.
Hey, thanks for having us. It's a great day to be in Coast Guard City, San Diego.
Fantastic. I mean, it's America's finest city.
America's finest, and the 21st and still the largest Coast Guard city in the nation.
21st, what does that mean?
So to be a Coast Guard city, a city applies to Congress for consideration to be designated the title of Coast Guard City.
Okay.
They have to demonstrate in that application that they show overwhelming support to the men, women, and families of the Coast Guard in their particular city. So the mayor's office, Mayor Faulkner and his team, put an application together, sent it up to Congress. Congress agreed, and they designated San Diego a year ago today Coast Guard City, 21st largest Coast Guard city in the nation. So the first one is Coast Guard City, USA, which is in Grand Haven, Michigan. And then Okay. Over the years, cities have applied, but it's the first time a big major city has been given the designation. Now, New York City is on the table right now, I'm being told, but my PA1 over here, PA1 Simpson, prior to coming in here, said we still will remain the largest Coast Guard city because San Diego is 372 square miles, and New York City is 304 square miles.
P.A. Simpson, good job. That is a fantastic
statistic.
Isn't
he the man? That's why he's the P.A. one, man.
Fantastic. We also have Commander Rob Potter. Rob, thank you. Welcome to the show.
No, thanks. Always great to come on and meet with you.
Yeah, absolutely. So we're going to unpack what you guys are up to. We're going to talk about San Diego as Coast Guard City,
right.
What you guys are doing for missions, how you're involved in rescues and basically keeping us safe,
right.
You know. But before we do that, I just want to get a little bit of background. You know, Joe, what was your start? I mean, how did you even get in the military? Where did you grow up?
Right. So I grew up in Miami, Florida. I was fortunate.
Tough place.
Right. Tough. Back in the 70s and 80s, my parents let me have an 18-foot boat to run around Key Biscayne.
And, nice.
You know, down in the Bay Area of Miami. You see the Coast Guard out there flying around, running the boats around. And I always thought, man, that's the coolest thing
they look
going
cool.
on.
I want to do
yeah,
that.
And my dad had was a Marine and then lateraled over to the Air Force. So there was a military background in the family. And I just had, my dad's really, it was a big impact on me, educating me on the military and, but also, having a deep respect for it. And for some reason, I found out in high school, I wanted to go to one of the academies.
Okay.
And then a buddy of mine on the cross country team said, "Hey, my brother just got picked up by the Coast Guard Academy." I'm like, Coast Guard Academy's got an academy?
There's
they got
an
one
academy?
Of those? You know, everybody thinks of Annapolis, West Point, Air Force.
Yeah.
But there's Coast Guard and then Merchant Marine Academy. I applied, got turned down by the academy right out of high school. I accepted the Citadel. I was going to go there. And then last minute, I told Dad, "Hey, you know what? I'm going to enlist in the Coast Guard. I'm going to show the Coast Guard Academy how passionate I am, as far as I am towards the Coast Guard and how much I want to serve." So he wasn't happy with me because we lost the deposit with the Citadel, but I enlisted.
Sure.
Went through boot camp, applied again, got turned down again.
Really?
But the Academy said, we'll let you go to the Naval Academy prep school. You got to prove yourself for 1 year. If you do well there, we'll let you into the Academy. And I got in after 2 years. So
thank God.
They wouldn't even look at me today. The standards today for the Coast Guard Academy are so high. Very, very competitive today compared to.
It's just good on the resume, I don't think I can get into the college that I went to, 20 years ago now if I paid my way in.
If you see the kids going in today and their resumes, it's impressive. The nation is getting some of the best that are going to be our future leaders taking care of our country.
Getting super competitive, and that's what we want. We want
the best
in these leadership roles,
That's right.
And good for your dad for laying the groundwork and being a role model for you. I can hear that in your speaking that your dad was a role model. You looked up to him and growing up in a military family. And,
right.
Hey, I want to serve too.
Well,
Coast Guard looks like my flavor.
Yeah, being a former Marine and Air Force, he did joke with me. He's like, I don't know how the apple fell so far from the tree, but then after I graduated from the academy, man, he was actually in tears.
Sure.
He was so proud. He says, man, you picked the right service. I had no idea. This is going to be a great life for you. And I'll tell you, I look back and I feel blessed every day that I had a chance to live my life as a Coast Guardsman.
Yeah, fantastic. Yeah. And where have been some of the places you've been stationed?
All over the country. I've been on the Great Lakes up in Michigan to Boston, Cape Cod, San Francisco here, Miami, Florida, Pensacola through Navy Flight School.
Yep.
I've lived all over the country, and I've taken my family with me. They've moved every 2 or 3 years. My wife was here.
God bless your wife.
Oh, I hit the lottery with her, by the way, because she's been with me. We've been married 25 years this year, and she has been a great supporter of my career and also keeping the kids well-adjusted and helping them transition to all the moves.
It's a lot in a family.
Oh, yeah.
You know?
It is.
And welcome to San Diego. I think hopefully this is your last stop because, in my opinion, this is the best city on the planet.
Well, the past few sector commanders have retired out of here, so we'll see. My orders are up next summer. I've been here since 2016, and so we're doing some soul searching now. What's the next step?
Great. Well, fantastic. Well, thank you and welcome.
Thanks.
And we're going to dig in some more.
I love it here.
And Rob, you know, so where did you grow up? What's your background?
Hey, so I grew up in Manassas, Virginia, just on
Manassas,
the outskirts.
Okay. My sister-in-law and brother-in-law live in Manassas. Great little town in Virginia.
Yeah, absolutely. Just on the outskirts of D.C.
Yep.
So kind of similar to the captain, I didn't even know that the Coast Guard had an academy when I first found out about it.
Yeah.
And being that close to Annapolis, there was a big draw and a lot of attention given to Annapolis. And one of my high school advisors said, hey, Rob, you should really probably think about becoming a cadet. So back then there was a big book of colleges, and I opened up the book under United States, and I started going down. And before I got to Navy, there was Coast Guard, and I said Coast Guard. I didn't even know they had an academy.
What is it, Coast Guard?
Kind of the same thing as the captain. So actually, out of high school, I guess our selection class must have been a little bit easier that time because I actually got in the first try. And so from there, went to graduated the academy, and I went first. My first station was here in San Diego.
Okay,
I was. So I've kind of come full circle for me. I was on one of the 378-foot cutters that was here, the Hamilton at the time, has since been decommissioned. But then after that, went to flight school. Following flight school, did 4 years in Clearwater, Florida, over to then moved over a lot, again, just like the captain with my family, over to Astoria, Oregon. So had our first daughter there. And from there, went to Mobile, Alabama. I just came off of a tour 2 years in the Senate. And I was a Senate liaison for the Coast Guard there and worked a lot with the folks on Congressional Hill. And here to San Diego, my next stop is actually going to be back to Boston now and going to be a National Security Fellow at Harvard University for a year.
Nice. My hometown.
Oh, back in Boston.
Back in Boston.
Oh, that's
I grew up in a little town, Scituate, Massachusetts, about 25 miles south.
Oh, yeah. I love Boston. That was my first assignment out of the academy. I was at the north end on the Coast Guard cutter Spencer. So I loved Little Italy down there.
Oh, it's fantastic. My father was a ship pilot. He was a Boston Harbor pilot for 42 years.
It's a great town. One thing I want to highlight about Commander Potter that he will not talk about, so I get to brag about him, is he actually is one of the few that walks around with a major leadership award given to him by the Coast Guard. And so why don't you, I'm going to ask you to talk about it a little bit, even though I know it goes against your grain.
So so I've actually been blessed with this recognition. So several years ago, 2013, I was recognized as the Witherspoon Inspirational Award winner. It's really a great award where the Coast Guard does such a great job of finding, you know, and recognizing their folks. So a lot of the effort that we do is recognized either through medals, through recognition, because we can't give folks pay increases. We can't give them days off. We can't,
sure.
You know, each one of us has to earn our own promotions and we make the way up. So, one of my colleagues actually submitted me for the award and I was selected of all the leaders within the Coast Guard as the Witherspoon Award winner. So
it's a big deal.
It's fantastic. So lay people like myself, what are the merits for this Witherspoon Award?
So every year what they do is there is somebody who stands out within your wardroom. So wardroom is basically where all the officers basically live. That's called the wardroom.
Sure.
Out of that, each unit is basically, they're asked if they want to recognize one member that has done something significant throughout their career, throughout the last year. And so really, depending upon what's going on in the service at that time, I just happen to be involved in some pretty major activities that the command trusted me to take a leadership role on, and went through and made sure those activities were completed, and they were completed successfully. So really kind of my package went up, and it was against many others that were submitted at the same time mine was. And I'm very thankful that mine was, that we were recognized. And also it gave a lot of credit to the unit that I was at also.
And we got them here in San Diego now.
Yeah. Well, that's, I mean, first of all, good for you. You know, for me, it always says something about a person's character when they are nominated or elected or chosen by their peers.
Right.
You know, it's not a popularity contest. It's, okay, what did this person do to exemplify deserving of this award?
That's right.
You know, and I'm sure it's a whole litany of things, but most importantly, putting others before yourself.
Right. Yeah. Selfless leadership, which I see. I've worked with Rob for 2 years here. He's selfless. He's got moral courage, and he's got incredible integrity and ethics. So, he got the award before he got here, but I see why he got the award every day serving with him. And he has led. He's the chief pilot. He's also our response chief at the sector. It's a very, very hard job, and I tell him all the time, I don't know how you pull off what you do, because he's saving lives and defending the homeland every day.
I got a great team.
So what is, you know, for our listeners, like, you know, chief pilot, what does that encompass? What does that look like?
Sure. So pretty much the role is we've got 3 helicopters and 18 pilots right now. So my job as a response chief, to kind of boil it down, if it floats, like any of our cutters or our small boats, if it flies or helicopters or has a gun, that's really kind of my department. So if it has to get done right now, somebody's in trouble, it comes to us. Thankfully, sometimes paperwork, that usually goes to somebody else. But yeah, anything that has to be done right now falls under department. So I am in charge of basically ensuring that any law enforcement case and any search and rescue case is done correctly and done with the right assets.
Done appropriately.
Correct. So, and to ensure that the folks that are doing those jobs have the right equipment, have the right training, and are ready for the call when that call comes in.
Yeah, and his department extends well beyond, sometimes even beyond the Sector San Diego area responsibility. So in the case of Hurricane Harvey, I got a call from the sector commander in Corpus Christi when the hurricane was bearing down on them, and he said, hey, I'm going to need help. Can you send an aircraft? All I had to do is make a phone call. He put the package together and deployed them in record time.
Off they go.
And they got on scene, and you're going to have a couple of those. You're going to have one of the pilots here in a few minutes, but they got on scene within 24 hours, saved 85 lives.
Wow.
And I'll talk to a little bit of what it goes into getting ready those crews to deploy.
Yeah, please. Well, fantastic. So, folks, if you're not buckled in, buckle your seatbelt, because we're actually just getting started with these guys. We're going to take a short break. We'll be right back. You're listening to Rise Up Radio.
AM 1170, The Answer.
Hey, folks. James Carmody, Synergy One Lending. Are you in the market to buy a property and need to close really fast? Synergy One Lending and the Carmody team is your family-owned mortgage bank. Right now, there's low inventory. There's a lot of offers. It's competitive. Synergy One Lending and the Carmody team can close your loan in as little as 10 days. Call today to find out more. 858-525-3086. Call James Carmody and the Carmody team at Synergy One Lending. 858-525-3086.
Of course I want our kids to eat fresh, healthy foods all the time. But we don't have a supermarket nearby, so it's a challenge.
I wish we were closer to good healthcare because of our son's asthma. Frankly, it's scary at times.
I'd love for our family to live in a nice house near a great school, but...
But none of these resources exist in our neighborhood.
Many variables can shape the outcome of children's lives, like the zip code where they grow up. That's because not all communities have the same opportunities, such as quality schools and housing, fresh food, and good healthcare. There are many ways to improve communities so everyone has a fair chance, regardless of zip code. You can make a difference. Join with HUD and local leaders to improve your community. Learn how at hud.gov/fairhousing. That's hud.gov/fairhousing. Fair housing, shared opportunity in every community. A public service message from HUD in partnership with the National Fair Housing Alliance.
Hey folks, James Carmody and Jared Kelly, the hosts of Rise Up Radio, your source for good news in the San Diego community. We are sharing the good news about what's going on. We need your help. If you are listening to us, please stop what you're doing. Go to sdriseup.com. In the bottom right corner of the page, there's a button that says, I will rise up. We need your help in sharing the good news in San Diego's community. Whether it's the local pastor of your church, your kid's little league coach, or small business owner, we want to share the good news. So go to sdriseup.com and share the stories.
AM 1170, The Answer.
Welcome back. You are listening to Rise Up Radio. I'm your host, James Carmody. Thank you so much for tuning in, folks. We hope you're having a fantastic day. We got the United States Coast Guard in studio with us, and just honored to have these leaders here. And we're starting to talk about, I don't know why we were number 21, but now we're on the list that San Diego is officially a Coast Guard city.
Yep.
Joe, what does that mean?
Well, it's a great honor. I mean, just to serve in a Coast Guard city and have a city that just shows a lot of love and support to the Coast Guard, just makes it that much greater to yeah. serve.
And I know we had to apply, and you said the mayor kind of helped us go through this process. Are there any particular metrics, or is it just like, all right, you guys are honoring the Coast Guard and you're doing a good job?
They actually have to show through letters from various areas of the coast, areas of the San Diego, like the Chamber of Commerce, Port of San Diego, et cetera, et cetera. And they write letters and demonstrate through that letter to Congress how they're actually supporting the men, women, and families of the U.S. Coast Guard. But, it's funny. So this is a big Navy town, and typically the Coast Guard, we have a very small footprint compared to the Navy. And I laugh sometimes because I had this Navy admiral kind of friendly rivalry going on between us, and he said, you guys pull your cutters in here, you drop off 47,000 pounds of cocaine. The Attorney General, comes in, all these big wigs come in from all over to D.C. to see your cutter and all you're doing. Don't they realize this is a Navy town? And I said, well, sir, it may be a Navy town, but it's a Coast Guard city. And I got no response. He hasn't talked to me since. So
he's blackballing you.
He's blackballing me. But it feels good that we have the Navy here, and they have such a big footprint, but then here comes the Coast Guard with our small footprint, and we're right up there side by side with them. We just a couple years ago got brought into the Veterans Day Parade. We hadn't been marching in that. Now we march in that.
Great.
We were included in the San Diego Military Advisory Council Economic Impact Study this last year.
Phenomenal.
We bring a good economic footprint to San Diego. We're currently doing a competition right now with redesigning our sector seal. Okay. It was a high school competition, and so we'll be putting the winner of that design up on the side of our hangar. So that's a great Coast Guard City initiative, and the list goes on. But I can tell you, Mayor Faulkner and his team have been nothing but incredible with supporting us and actually putting action to the title. And the city now has a Coast Guard City Committee that actually meets at the city the mayor's building and actually discusses how to support the men, women, and families of the U.S. Coast Guard here.
That's incredible.
Yeah.
Now, I know that the mayor's really been pushing for you guys. There was just a designation recently, right?
Last year, yeah. one year ago today, the San Diego was designated a Coast Guard city. The Commandant of the Coast Guard flew in. We had a big celebration at the sector. The mayor gave the Commandant the key to the city. Also gave me the key to the city, which is a great honor.
Great.
And the Congressman flew in, former sector commanders, and we had hundreds of people sitting on the ramp at the Coast Guard sector to help celebrate the new designation.
Phenomenal.
Yeah. Phenomenal. And we're celebrating our 1 year anniversary today.
Wow. Okay. What are some of the other things, the public and the citizens of San Diego need to know about the Coast Guard and their participation around here?
I think the community just needs to keep in mind that the Coast Guard is standing the watch today, ready for the call. So we have 24/7 at the unit, men and women standing by, ready to launch an aircraft, launching their cutters or launch in small boats to go out and answer the call for help, whether that's here locally or somewhere in the country if there's a national crisis. Last year, Coast Guard Sector San Diego is responsible for saving and assisting just under 400 lives. So the folks we saved, those are folks that we made the difference between life or death for them. That because we had folks that are proficient, dedicated, committed, and they're going to go into the unknown in harm's way, put their lives at risk, those folks got to go home and be with their families for the holidays, and they're safe today. And so, you know, the communities just want them to know we're here, and we're here to bring hope when maybe hope is starting to diminish a little bit.
Yeah. Well, thank you for that. You know, we as a civilian, I appreciate that. And, you know, having a young family, it gives a sense of peace.
Right.
You know, knowing that security and that protection is there.
And I'll tell you, in my experience, and I've been doing this for 32 years, I joined in 86. In my experiences, in a crisis, a crisis never got worse after a Coastie showed up. Things started getting a little better. So
I like that.
Semper Paratus.
Also, you know, I know that earlier in February, you know, we had Jayhawk Day.
Right.
What's Jayhawk Day?
So Jayhawk Day, so the mayor and council member Zapp did a proclamation for Jayhawk Day in honoring the men and women or the Coast Guard crew that went up to save the family of five during the mudslides.
Wow.
Yeah, and not only did we save a family of five, but we also saved their two dogs. And
that's
so,
important as a owner of a 100-pound lab.
Right.
That is important.
And, you know, we're concerned about that. When the aircraft commander makes the decision to bring up large dogs, we want to make sure that those dogs don't kind of get, you know, nervous or what have you and start jumping around in the aircraft. Because if they jump up in the front of the aircraft, that could
we don't need them flying the plane.
With them flying the planes. There's a lot of controls up there. And so that's a judgment call by the aircraft commander. He made a great call. The rescue swimmers did a good job assessing the dogs. The dogs were very calm in the aircraft that I was briefed on, and so we saved the day. And not only did we save the mom and dad, but this was these were three children, ages 9, 3, and a 7-week-old baby. So
wow,
yeah,
thank you for that.
And you're gonna have one of the rescue swimmers on your show
tomorrow
here
next.
Yeah, shortly.
Can't wait. Those guys are a little crazy, but I like it.
They are crazy, but that's good.
And the reason they call it Jayhawk Day, because that is the helicopter that we fly. It's the 860 Jayhawk.
Right.
Got it. And so is that the typical helicopter, you know, we look up in the sky and we see, you know, the white and orange helicopter. Is that what it is?
That's it. That's the one. Okay. We have three here in San Diego, but then, you know, we have other airframes in the Coast Guard, the H-65 Dolphin. It's a complete orange aircraft that's up in Point Magoo, just near L.A. But here in San Diego, we have the Jayhawk. And Rob, he can brag more about the Jayhawk. It's an incredible machine. The Army flies it. It's the Black Hawk. Navy flies it. It's called the Seahawk. We call it the Jayhawk. But that aircraft is a powerhouse, and it can go offshore pretty far and save the day. And our pilots and crews are very proficient in making that aircraft work in their favor to make sure that they save lives when they need to.
Yes, sir. So one of the things that we always look out for before we go into any type of case, whether it be mudslides, Hurricane Katrina, Hurricane Harvey, anything like that, there's a couple factors that we've got to look at. So the crew that's going to come talk to us next, they're going to talk about their experience. I just want to take a second to kind of talk about what types of things go into prepping one of those crews before they go. So really, before any major like SAR case that we're going to go for, we always look at five different things. One is going to be the crew mix of the crew that we're sending up there. The aircraft itself, what equipment or supplies do they need to bring, of course, the weather, and how long they're going to need to be there for. So, you know, when we look at a case like Hurricane Harvey, we know that they're going to be there for several days. Though we might not know exactly what equipment they need to bring, we know some of these items that we can answer ahead of time. But in many cases, we may not know any of it. We may not know what the weather is, because all we might know is, hey, there's a boat that's in trouble 200 miles offshore. And we might have an idea of what the weather is, but in many cases, this is unknown. So that kind of really starts with the crew mix. So we get brand new pilots out of flight school, and the majority of Coast Guard pilots will go through a Navy flight school in Pensacola. Then we'll train them how to fly the our 860 Jayhawk through our schoolhouse in Mobile, Alabama, and then they'll come here. So basically not having any Coast Guard experience whatsoever, and we will basically groom them from being a brand new, we'll call them out of the box, to a experienced aircraft commander that can make on-the-fly decisions and will be the person in charge that has 51% of the vote in any case that they might find themselves in. So it's quite a grooming process. It takes a while to really get these guys and girls about two years to finally when they can start signing for the plan and be in that ultimate decision of, yes, we are going to do this or no, we're not going to do that. So one of the pilots that is going to come up next actually is Tristan Taylor. That was his first live hoist being in the right seat. So that's a great kudos to him. But the other thing we have to consider is we got to make sure that we send them out with the right tools. I mentioned the aircraft itself. You know, how many, of course, there's a great deal for the maintenance cycles on the plane. How many hours does it have left? Is this the right asset that we're sending? Do we need to put any additional equipment into it? Do we need to bring, so in the case of the mudslides, do we have to bring shovels? Do we have to bring, it could be anything from axes, chainsaw, pumps, or do we need bring nothing at all because we just need the cabin empty so we can put the maximum number of people inside? The other part too is the duration. If we are going to find ourselves in a spot for a while, the maintenance to support an 860 is a huge footprint. Do we have to bring in trailers? You know, in the mudslides, that was a difficult aspect because we couldn't physically drive to many of the places that we were working. So do we have to, you know, put sling one, attach it to the bottom of the helicopter and fly one in? Do we have to put it on a C-130 and try to go to a remote airport? So there is a lot of work that goes in very, very, very quickly. And this is where our team really shines is within a matter of minutes, they can go basically from standing at a standstill of doing just kind of like whatever paperwork or daily tasks they might be doing to an all-out sprint of getting you ready to go and bounce and challenge some pretty significant weather conditions where somebody may be having the worst day of their lives. That is when our crews have to be at their best. So we've got to put them in a situation where it's amazing, challenging, as the captain said, where hope could be diminishing, and they have to bring that hope, and they have to be on their A game. So that's, again, just another testament to our guys and all the preparation that goes into doing any of these rescues.
It's, you know, it is critical. And, you know, the training, the preparation that you guys undergo just for that, to be in that specific situation and actually make the right call, the right decision, is paramount. And, you know, I thank you guys for what you're doing. I'm excited to continue actually this conversation and share with the next three gentlemen that we have coming in. Captain Mazzella, Commander Porter, thank you so much for being on the show.
Thank you.
And, thank you very much, sir.
I'm excited for the crew that's coming on next. It's going to be great.
They got absolutely a great story. Folks, stick around. Rise Up Radio. We'll be back in a few.
Hey folks, James Carmody and Jared Kelly, the hosts of Rise Up Radio, your source for good news in the San Diego community. We are sharing the good news about what's going on. We need your help. If you are listening to us, please stop what you're doing. Go to sdriseup.com. In the bottom right corner of the page, there's a button that says, I will rise up. We need your help in sharing the good news in San Diego's community. Whether it's the local pastor of your church, your kid's little league coach, or small business owner, we want to share the good news. So go to sdriseup.com and share the stories.
Life is full of bittersweet transitions. It's difficult to know how these changes will impact us over time. For some people, difficult transitions like retirement, divorce, or loss of a loved one can hit harder than expected and may contribute to feelings of hopelessness or even thoughts of suicide. The risk of suicide is even higher for men over 50 who served our country. Guys like me. That's why support from friends and family makes such a big difference. Every day, your actions could help save a life. Together, we got this. Learn how you can help save a life at VeteransCrisisLine.net.
Hey folks, James Carmody, Synergy One Lending. Are you in the market to buy a property and need to close really fast? Synergy One Lending and the Carmody team is your family-owned mortgage bank. Right now, there's low inventory, there's a lot of offers, it's competitive. Synergy One Lending and the Carmody team can close your loan in as little as 10 days. Call today to find out more. 858-525-3086. Call James Carmody and the Carmody team at Synergy One Lending, 858-525-3086.
AM 1170, The Answer.
Welcome back. You are listening to Rise Up Radio. I'm your host, James Carmody. You are following us at sdriseup.com. Thank you so much for all the love and the support as we continue into our third year. The community Rise Up has just been overwhelming. And please continue to follow us on social media. Follow us online at sdriseup.com. And remember, we're always looking for heroes. You can go on the page at sdriseup.com down the bottom there, and you can actually nominate a hero. Who's that person in your life or your family's life that is actually making a difference? That's what the show is all about. It's highlighting servant leaders, who's moving the needle and making a difference in San Diego so we can own this town as America's finest city. Folks, we got the Coast Guard. United States Coast Guard is back in studio with us. We had a captain and commander in here earlier with us. I am not going to delay. Let's introduce these gentlemen. Lieutenant Junior Grade Treston Thomas Taylor, welcome to the show, sir.
Thank you for having me. Appreciate it.
Absolutely, absolutely. And then we have Avionics Electrician Technician 2, Jacob Dillon. Welcome to the show.
Yes, sir. Thank you. Happy to be here.
Absolutely, absolutely. And then Aviation Survival Technician 3rd, William Harrison. Welcome, sir.
Thank you. Thanks for having us.
Absolutely. So you guys get the awesome job of working for the Coast Guard. You get to cruise around in helicopters and planes and boats and cutters and do all that fun stuff. Preston, where are you from and what had you like choose the Coast Guard in the first place?
So I'm from Fort Worth, Texas, and I actually grew up right next to Bell Helicopter, which is a helicopter manufacturing plant.
Yep.
And so literally the only thing I've ever wanted to do with my life is fly helicopters. Anytime they'd fly over the house, I'd run outside and, you know, grab my parents. And I always just had a love for aviation, specifically helicopters. So yeah. I'm very fortunate to be where I am. It worked out. I worked hard to get here, and I love my job every single day.
And did you go in after school, or did you go straight into the Coast Guard? What was your path?
So after high school, I went to the Coast Guard Academy, spent 4 years there, got my commission as an officer, and was accepted into flight school. So I did naval flight training down in Pensacola, Florida for 2 years, and then was lucky enough to get stationed in San Diego. Someone had to do it, so I volunteered.
Right. I know it's rough, but you're here.
I am. Yes, sir.
Fantastic. Well, thank you. Yep, thank you.
Thank you.
And Jacob, how about yourself? Where are you from?
I'm from Colorado Springs, Colorado. Originally. Okay. There's a lot of Air Force out there, Army too. So I would see the pilots flying over, the jets and the big planes. And same thing with Mr. Taylor over here. I just always want to be in the air. So I don't know how to explain getting in the Coast Guard from a landlocked state like Colorado.
Right.
I met a guy and he was a prior service Coast Guard guy, and he just talked it up. And I always thought I'd be in the Air Force, but ended up joining the Coast Guard.
And, did you go into the academy first?
Or? I did not. I'm not an officer, so I went to boot camp.
Yep.
And then when I got out of college, was having a hard time deciding if I wanted to actually join the military or not. And I just did it, enlisted and went to boot camp. And I got out and I put my name on the A school list to be an avionics electrical technician. And then my first unit was in Kodiak, Alaska. I spent 3 years up there.
A little cold.
And then, cold. It's a lot of action up there too for the Coast Guard. But and now I'm down here in San Diego. It's a little warmer and a little less exciting, but definitely a lot to do. It's a fun place to live. So
yeah, absolutely.
Love it here.
Absolutely. Well, thank you. Thank you for being here. And William, what's your background? Where are you from?
Originally from Hamilton, New Jersey.
East Coast?
Yeah. So enjoying VDOT on the West Coast. But I did 2 years of community college, and I knew I wanted to enlist in the military. Yep. You know, the whole 9-to-5 desk job thing just didn't really seem like my kind of forte. And for whatever reason, the Coast Guard kind of seemed like the best fit. You know, going down the shore, I was kind of aware of the Coast Guard a bit. Yep. But it just kind of seemed like the best fit. You know, I like to be on the water and whatnot. And so did 2 years of community college, got in, and it's, you know, been 8 years now and 5 years as a rescue swimmer. So it's kind of flying by.
Wow. Well, good for you.
Yeah, thank
you. Good for you. Thank you for being here. So want to talk a little bit about today, you guys, about, you know, some of the missions that you've been involved with. And I know you guys have participated in, you know, several of the rescue missions, including the mudslides, Harvey. Treston, what have been, you know, some of the missions that have been very impactful for you?
Definitely the Santa Barbara mudslides was, probably the most monumentous event so far in my career. That was my first operational hoist sitting in the right seat. So I was actually the pilot actually conducting the hoisting.
So you were actually hoisting people up?
I was, yes, wow. Sir. So I was, you know, holding the helicopter in place over the roof while Jake and, you know, Billy and our other rescue swimmer, Aaron, were doing their job. So that was the first time that I had been able to do that. And it was obviously very humbling seeing them come up into the helicopter, you know, a family who had pretty much just lost everything. They were cold. They were scared. So it was very humbling to be a part of their rescue. That's definitely something that will always stick with me for the rest of my life.
Yeah, well, thank you for that. I mean, so folks, if you didn't grasp that, I mean, these are the guys that were saving people's lives up in Santa Barbara. You know, I haven't been through a mudslide. I can't imagine what that's like. A couple of my coworkers up there. But imagine your house is gone within minutes and you have to get out with your family, maybe your pets, your wallet, and a picture or two if you can even grab it, and just trying to survive. And these guys were the ones that came to the rescue and the ones flying over to actually take them out of there. Thank you.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah, and you know, we obviously got launched out of San Diego here where it's, yep, you know, perfect. It's sunny. It was a nice day out. And then as we were flying up along the coast, you could see the storm clouds rolling in over Santa Barbara and the Ventura County area. And you could kind of see just how severe it actually was, you know, especially after all the fires that they had up there. There was nothing holding any of that dirt in place. So it was truly an experience, and it was a sight to see, just all the mud everywhere, everybody who had lost their homes.
Yeah.
And we were very fortunate that we were able to, you know, partake in those rescues to be launched with the Coast Guard up there.
Yeah. And Jacob, what was that like for you?
Same as Mr. Tristan. I mean, it was a very humbling experience. It was eye-opening. First time I'd ever seen mudslides as well. And flying over it and just looking down and seeing the path of the mud and the houses ripped off their foundations. Some of them just completely gone. Some of them just filled with mud. The family we rescued, their house just managed to stay put, but it was just full of mud. So they were trapped in their attic, waiting for someone to come rescue them. And so, I mean, it's kind of humbling to watch and see what Mother Nature can do. And it's also very, you know, it gives us a good feeling that we can go out and, you know, help someone out of the worst days in their life. So. Bringing that family to the cabin and just seeing the relief on their eyes and the, you know, just pure, you know, weight taken off their shoulders that they can get out of there. And especially with their three, you know, really young kids and their two dogs, you know, very humbling experience. And we're more than happy and proud to be able to provide the service for the people.
Absolutely. I mean, you're giving those people a sense of hope.
Yeah.
You know? Wow. William, what was that like for you?
it's definitely unique. It was my first time doing a case in, I guess you can call it, like urban kind of rescue.
Yep.
So as opposed to having a medevac off a cruise ship 200 miles offshore or a person in the water missing that got pulled by a riptide, you know, it was my first time kind of deploying down the land in this kind of situation. I wasn't deployed to Harvey and hadn't experienced anything like that. So it was really unique, especially since the other rescue swimmer that was there, Aaron Custer. Usually we always go out by ourselves. So it's a crew of four, pilot, co-pilot, flight mech, and then one rescue swimmer. But we actually brought both of us, which turned out to be tremendously helpful. As you saw in the video, you know, Jake lowered us right down to the roof. It was just an easy point to get us down instead of just plopping us in the mud there. And then we were able to kind of back each other up. As you can see, you know, we're holding on to each other's Triton as we're hanging off this roof, you know, pulling up each family member. And then, you know, having the young kids was definitely definitely more sense of panic and emergency almost, you know. I mean,
was it a 7-month-old?
I think it was a 2-month-old boy.
So almost like 7 weeks.
Yeah, God. Very young. So, I mean, obviously that was our first concern was let's get this mom and child up. And,
yeah.
You know, the first responders that were down there kind of going house to house, you know, looking for people. You know, he brings her out and the child and hands the boy up. And I'm like, oh, my God. You know, I pass him back to Aaron. He's holding on to me. And, you know, luckily we got her out first and then the two kids and father and the two dogs. But it was, to be able to make a difference, you know, definitely helps out. Like I said, you know, the being able to go to work and have that good feeling of like, you know, I actually, you know, felt like I contributed to, you know, society, did something a little bit bigger than myself, you know.
Yeah, I mean, you guys are it. So. You guys are the front line. I mean, it's no joke.
Yeah.
You know, without you guys, those people may not have made it.
Yeah, possibly.
Like, no kidding.
Yeah.
You know, rescue swimmer. You are the crazy one in the bunch.
Yeah.
And I love it because I'm a water rat. Grew up in you know, Cape Cod. What had you become a rescue swimmer?
Man, I don't really know. I you know, I grew up swimming, and when I first joined the Coast Guard, I kind of, you know, thought about going rescue swimmer, but you know, I've heard all the people that have gone, and the attrition rate, failure rate is super high, and I was like, oh my God, I don't know if I can do this. And after some time in the Coast Guard, I was in for about 2 years, I realized, you know, I really need to give this a try. I'm going to kind of regret it. You know, I was thinking about going AMT, become a flight mechanic, and I was like, if I'm the person deploying this swimmer, I'm always going to be thinking, what if that was me? And it just kind of felt like the right thing to do. And, you know, went through my four-month airman program, trained with rescue swimmers actually in San Diego, and then went out to school for 4 months, which turned into seven actually with a little bit of a hiccup, rephasal. But it's, you know, no other job I'd like to have, you know, getting paid to essentially work out and jump at helicopters and, you know, it's a good time.
Absolutely, yeah. I mean, so in addition to Santa Barbara, you know, what's been another mission that was like very impactful for you?
I was stationed actually back in Atlantic City, New Jersey, for 4 years. And one of the best cases I think I had was a little impromptu. We were just flying up to New York. It was just after Hurricane Joaquin. Someone that decided to take their jet ski out and, you know, good
in a hurricane.
Good 10 to 12 foot waves, you know, and happened to fall over. His jet ski washed up on the jetty, and he was just, you know, kind of swimming back off the jetty. And the timing was just impeccable. We just happened to be flying over. Swoop back around. The flight mech lowered me down. I did a physical grip of him. So I just kind of locked arms underneath, and they pulled us up, kept us on the cable, and then air taxied over to the beach and put us down. And that was definitely a really unique and just, you know, on the fly case that because of our training that we do so much, like everything just synced into place so quick.
Wow. Well, yeah, I don't know how you guys do it. I'm grateful that you do it. And not I don't know as I would have the fortitude, and I'm grateful for you guys every single day. We're going to take a short break here in a second. When we come back, I want to talk about Harvey and, you know, the magnitude of Harvey and what that was like for you and, you know, the difference that you guys made there. All right, folks, we're going to take a short break. You're listening to Rise Up Radio. Stick around. We'll be back in a few.
1170, The Answer.
Hey folks, James Carmody, Synergy One Lending. Are you in the market to buy a property and need to close really fast? Synergy One Lending and the Carmody team is your family-owned mortgage bank. Right now, there's low inventory, there's a lot of offers, it's competitive. Synergy One Lending and the Carmody team can close your loan in as little as 10 days. Call today to find out more. 858-525-3086. Call James Carmody and the Carmody team at Synergy One Lending, 858-525-3086.
Soil, the final frontier. These are the voyages of the Soil Ship Enterprise to explore soil life, to boldly grow where cover crops have never grown before. Farmer's Log, soil date 31655.4. We've come across some strange but incredibly helpful life forms. We didn't have to travel far to find them, but these organisms have proven invaluable on our trip through the solar system. They help feed us by nourishing and protecting our crops. They've built our soil structure to make it more resilient to the harsh weather we encounter. Our sensors indicate they're even helping us store carbon that plants take out of the atmosphere and put it back into the soil. Guess you can say our living and life-giving soil is the best thing to cling on to. Sorry. That's soil fleet humor. Visit your local USDA Natural Resources Conservation Service office today and learn more about the basics and benefits of soil health. This message brought to you by USDA and this radio station.
Hey folks, James Carmody and Jared Kelly, the hosts of Rise Up Radio, your source for good news in the San Diego community. We are sharing the good news about what's going on. We need your help. If you are listening to us, please stop what you're doing. Go to sdriseup.com. In the bottom right corner of the page, there's a button that says, I will rise up. We need your help in sharing the good news in San Diego's community. Whether it's the local pastor of your church, your kid's little league coach, or small business owner, we want to share the good news. So go to sdriseup.com and share the stories.
AM 1170, The Answer, San Diego.
Welcome back
You are listening to Rise Up Radio. I'm your host, James Carmody. Thank you so much, folks, for all the love and the support. We're rolling into our third year here strong. You're following us at sdriseup.com. We have the United States Coast Guard in studio with us, and we have Lieutenant Junior Grade Tristan Taylor, Aviation Survival Technician 3rd William Arison, Avionics Electrical Technician 2 Jacob Dillon. Gentlemen, welcome back to the show. Mr. Tristan Taylor, formerly Triple T, now Tress, I want to kick it off with you, sir, because I know that you were in Harvey, you were over in Texas, and that was, you know, a massive rescue mission. You know, first of all, I mean, what was going on when you actually first got that call, when you first got the orders?
Yeah, so that's definitely, it's something that had a huge impact on me being from Texas.
Yeah.
It's definitely hard to hear that there's some sort of huge natural disaster.
Yep.
That's occurring, and especially in an area where, you know, I have friends and family who might be there. And so it's definitely hard to hear that. And then, of course, once I did hear, you know, that we were sending Coast Guard assets down there, I was probably the first person to volunteer. I was, you know, having a lot of Texas pride, you know,
sure.
So I was like, please send me. But I was very fortunate to be able to go. It was a very humbling experience, and you know, we were able to do a lot of really good things down there for a lot of people. So it was.
And were you working the hoist at that point, or what were you specifically doing?
So when I was in Houston for Hurricane Harvey, I was mainly serving as the co-pilot. So I was sitting in the left seat, you know, in the cockpit of the helicopter, basically providing backup for the pilot flying, who was actually doing the hoisting. I was running the radios, navigating us around, conducting checklists, going through those kind of procedures. But on top of that, my main job was just to act as a safety pilot, making sure that everything we were doing inside and outside of the helicopter was completely safe.
Yeah.
And it definitely was a full-time job down in Harvey, especially with the weather and the
what's that like? You know, you're in a helicopter, hurricane.
it's a very high workload.
It's not Bluebird skies. Like, no, yeah, we got not. This, guys.
No, it was definitely some of the more challenging flying that I have ever done. We were flying in winds in excess of 60 miles an hour.
Wow.
The cloud ceiling was down at 200 feet above the ground. It was a torrential downpour. You could barely see a quarter mile in front of you at some times. Wow. So it definitely makes flying very challenging. And then especially in an urban environment like Houston.
Residential neighborhoods.
Right. You know, Houston is a huge area. They have lots of tall buildings and power lines and towers. So it requires, you know, all hands on deck, as we say, to be able to navigate through all that stuff, making sure that everybody is situationally aware as to what's going on and what kind of environment that we are in. So it was definitely something that requires your full attention. You know, I can remember we flew by downtown Houston, and I remember just looking up at the tops of the buildings. You couldn't even see the tops of the buildings. I was
'cause of the clouds.
Right. So I'm looking up at about halfway through the building. And it was like, wow, we are extremely low right now. This is definitely something we don't do very often, but we're very good at communicating with one each other inside the aircraft. You know, we had all of our maps and charts open, and I was saying, all right, there's a tower in front of us. Come right, come left.
I know you guys do massive amounts of training. I mean, years of training before you even get put in this situation. I mean, but how do you train for a hurricane? I mean, what kind of preparation are you doing to even get into this position to say, all right, I know that the decision I'm about to make is the right one?
Well, it definitely starts with just staying in the books in the first place. You know, the key to being a good pilot or air crew is knowing what your job is and knowing how to do it well. And that's why we do spend all that time training. We spend a lot of time studying. You know, we talk to each other as pilots, like, hey, what would you do in this situation? So that way, when situations like Hurricane Harvey do arise, we've already had those conversations. We've already put ourselves in situations where we kind of practice running through some of those scenarios. So that way, you know, on game day, if you will, everybody's ready to roll and everything just goes extremely smooth.
And what about the, you know, the magnitude of Harvey? I mean, I know Harvey was just a massive operation. I mean, it's something like 85 rescues.
Absolutely. So flying in Hurricane Harvey was very crazy to put it lightly. You know, we were one of maybe 60 or 70 helicopters flying in the area, both Coast Guard helicopters, Navy helicopters, Marine Corps, police departments, fire departments. There were so many people down there helping. So, you know, on one hand, that's incredible to see a response like that. Everybody coming down, doing their part, helping out where they can. On the other hand, in poor weather and limited visibility, it's also very challenging to fly around that many other helicopters.
Sure.
Especially, you know, you'll be up on a radio frequency and, you know, the air traffic controller might tell you, hey, you have a helicopter within a half mile of you. And you're like, I can't see them. I have no idea where they right. are. Which
they're this blip on the radar.
Exactly.
It's getting far enough away.
And as pilots, that's probably, you know, the worst thing you can hear is like, okay, there's somebody close to me and I cannot see them. And that's a lot of what Hurricane Harvey was, is, you know, flying. You're not only navigating around towers and power lines in a very dark and, you know, challenging environment like that, but you're also trying to avoid other helicopters and other air traffic as well. So it definitely, it was, took a lot of coordination. We took everything pretty slow. We talked about everything that we were going to do before we actually did it. That way everybody was on the same page and we made sure that we let other aircraft in the area know, hey, this is where we are. This is what we're doing. This is what you can expect us to do.
That communication is critical.
Absolutely.
So was Harvey like your first big mission?
That was actually my first mission. And
couldn't
have thrown me into anything more challenging. But it was, like I said, it was great to be a part of that. It was very humbling and to work with such great people who are also ready to answer that call at any time of the day is truly incredible. You know, being around a bunch of what I would consider heroes, and it was truly a remarkable experience.
Absolutely. So you cut your teeth on Harvey, and then, you know, fast forward a year later, like, we got mudslides. Okay, great. Where the heck do mudslides come from? Okay, we got this massive rain and we have Santa Barbara that's actually just like slipping away. And you guys, again, you know, you get in the helicopters, you don't think twice and you just deploy and you just go.
Absolutely.
You know, and I know this is what you guys signed up for, right? This is what you put your name on the dotted line for, and this is what you get paid for. What's been some of the, you know, the recognition you guys have received? You know, I know the mayor's, you know, has been doing a lot of work for you guys, you know, to get awards and get different recognitions. What's that been like?
Yeah. So the mayor of San Diego proclaimed February 6th is Coast Guard Jayhawk Day. And that was in response to the mudslides up in Santa Barbara. And, you know, while we do sign up for this job and this is what, you know, most of us feel like we were born to do, we definitely don't do it for recognition. We do it so that way, you know, a family, someone's son, daughter, mom, dad can come home at the end of the day.
2 month old and their parents and dogs can
exactly.
get out alive.
But it was really cool to be able to see the city of San Diego recognizing the Coast Guard for the efforts that happened up in Santa Barbara. It's pretty cool to be able to say like, oh yeah, I was there. I did that. But like I said, you're not going to meet anyone in the Coast Guard who isn't humble, who says, hey, we were just doing our job and, you know, we did it yesterday. We'll do it again today and we're ready for it tomorrow. So,
yeah. What are some things, and this is for any of you guys, what are some things that, you know, the public needs to know about the Coast Guard, about the missions and about the rescues? You know, what do they need to do to be informed? All of that.
Well, definitely, you know, you can check out all the Coast Guard missions on the Coast Guard website. It gives a pretty in-depth analysis of what the Coast Guard does. But for the most part, especially for people in San Diego here, you know, making sure that you're making the right decisions especially when you're out on the water, making safe decisions. So that way, you know, people like us don't have to come out and save you.
Like, don't take a jet ski out in a hurricane.
Don't take a jet ski out in a hurricane is a really good one. But yeah, it's just making those right decisions and at least preparing yourself, you know, if something does happen, making sure you have life jackets and an EPIRB, you know, some sort of device.
Make sure your EPIRB works.
Yes. Make sure the batteries are charged. Exactly.
It's actually registered to you.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. And then, you know, the reason why I say this is because, you know, whenever you're searching for someone or something in the water, especially at night, it's very difficult to see. And so pretty much any precaution you can take to make our job easier to find you, take it. It's worth the money. It's worth every single penny. Because if you do find yourself in a situation where the Coast Guard does have to come out and get you, you're gonna want us to be able to find you pretty quickly.
Yeah, we can't ask the person that drowned. I wish they spent that money on the new batteries for the EPIRB.
Exactly, exactly. But you know, then again, that's why we are here. Is when people do end up in situations like that, we're the ones who are going to be answering the call. We're going to be the ones taking the helicopter offshore. You know, being in the boat and performing those missions to go out and save people.
And you know, so as we wind this down, you know, we'll have the Coast Guard website on our webpage. You know, encourage all of our listeners, people that are listening to this, go on there and just, you know, get up to speed on precautions. What should you be doing as a boater, as a swimmer, you know, in and around the air and water to make sure that you and your family are safe and secure. If you are at all inspired, as I am, but you're inspired by any of these gentlemen, any of the five gentlemen that have been on today, and you're interested more about the Coast Guard, you can check out gocoastguard.com. Real quick, want to hear what's next for each of you.
For me, I'm just going to continue studying. I'm going to become the best pilot I can be, so that way I can continue to do the Coast Guard mission every day.
Got it. So becoming a pilot.
Absolutely.
Fantastic. Jacob?
For me, it's just, you know, continue my career, you know, advancing through the Coast Guard ranks, you know, and training with the, you know, the awesome flight crews we have and continue to go out and save people when they need it. And then transfer in 2 years. So, you know, be on to the next location and the next adventure. So,
well, thank you for all that you do.
Yes, sir.
William, how about you?
Same here. Yeah, just advancing my Coast Guard career. I still have 3.5 years left in San Diego. Just got here. But just staying in shape, working out, and then is getting exposed to as many different kind of trainings as we can.
Where does one go from rescue swimmer? To me, I feel like that's the end all be all. Like, I secretly want to be a rescue swimmer.
For us, it's kind of a little pinpointed job, you know. A lot of guys get kind of tired of it, but I don't think I'll ever get tired. So far, I'm not tired of flying around and jumping out. So.
Well, thank you. I'm clear that you're passionate about jumping out of perfectly good planes into water to save us civilian butts. Gentlemen, thank you so much for being here. Thank you for sharing your story. Thank you for all that you did in Harvey and in the mudslide specifically. San Diego is a Coast Guard city, and in part due to these gentlemen and the leadership of the United States Coast Guard. Folks, thank you so much for tuning in. You've been listening to Rise Up Radio. Remember, as always, rise up.